All right, welcome to this week's episode of Double Nine Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry with Sam Lau.
Hey.
It's Shmave 31st. It's our second summer special episode. That's a little bit of a tongue twister there, where we record at 10 a.m. Pacific time before the market closes, so that people can get on into enjoying their weekends. We still have the May gray out here in LA, but I guess it's the last day of May gray before it gets to June gloom.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of which, I've actually got some sun here, so that burned off a little bit quicker.
Nice.
But the end of Shmei means the beginning of Jamun, so I guess I'll tag Sherman in on the
Yeah.
next 30 days or so.
All right. Well, with that, why don't we get into the where are we with the week for the week, Sam?
Yeah, so for that we got the since it's May 31st, just before the close, we'll give you the kind of what we're seeing going into the end of the week, the end of the month, to give you the months of May's return, and then of course year to date here. So looking across the board here, yep, it looks like everything is in the red on a week-to-date basis, starting off with the S&P 500. That's down about 1.8% so far on the week. Month to date, faring pretty strongly, actually. Looking at a 3.5% positive return. Only two sectors showing a negative sign in front at this point. Industrials is a little cuspy. It was down. It was up about 3 basis points earlier when I took a look, so that could swing either way for the month to date. Yet, consumer discretionary and energy are both negative for the early look on the month to date. Consumer discretionary down about a point, energy down about a point and a half. Every other sector of the S&P 500 seems to be in the green here. So I guess we can mark this one on the books, but utilities is the going to be the best performer performing sector on the month. Absent a very big move here, but that's up 7.6% as I see it right now. It's again, this is not something we say often, but more frequently this past month. So let's put that one in the books. And then looking across it on the year-to-date basis, it's pulling up the S&P 500. Utilities is up about 14.5%, but far and away the best performer as well on the year-to-date basis here. S&P 500 over the same time frame is up just under 10%. So really getting some strength here in the utility sector as that's picking up some of this euphoria around the AI narrative, which has definitely been hot in 2024. People thinking that the amount of power consumption that's going to be required as AI takes a more center stage in daily life are see the utilities portions of the U.S. economy benefiting from that. We'll see if that continues to hold true.
I couldn't think of a better word, but hot is probably an understatement.
That's right. That's right. So we'll see if it, if a lot of that holds, in terms of getting some of that energy sector or energy names under the utility sector really pans out there. You and I, we've been talking about and Eric and Mark as they've been on this episode, but we've been talking a lot about the narrowness of the strength in the S&P 500, based on the number of names really driving some of this return. And I was playing around with one of these new Bloomberg functions that I stumbled across this morning. And looking at it here, when we take a look at the S&P 500, starting with the year-to-date performance, and here I'm talking about, I'm going to start talking about price return, not total return here. So these don't seem to include dividend returns into the overall performance. But looking at it on a year-to-date basis, on Bloomberg, I see Nvidia up 117% through the time of this recording on a year-to-date basis relative to the S&P 500. Again, price return up about 8.9%. Of that 8.9%, Nvidia contributed 40% of that total price return on a year-to-date basis.
That's
So if you
crazy.
want to talk about narrowness of market, you don't even talk about sectors here. We're talking about narrowness of one name driving this return for the S&P 500. It's pretty narrow. I mean, I think you can look up the textbook, the definition of that for a market perspective in the dictionary, and I think Nvidia would pretty much pop up right there. If we take a look at it for a month to date, or sorry, yeah, month to date. I'll call it month to date since we're not at the close yet for an end of business year. But starting from the end of April through right now on May 31st, time of recording, you take a look at NVIDIA, and guess what? For the total S&P 500, let's just say month to date performance on price is up about 3.2%. NVIDIA is up just under 25% on that same period. So again, contributing right about 40% of the total price return of the total S&P 500. A little bit less narrow, though, I guess you can say, because I'm looking at the next best performer in term, or next highest contributor to that price return. That's Apple. Apple's up just over, or sorry, not up, contributing just over 20% of that total price return for the month of May here. So all in, you know, you've got 60% of the contribution of price return coming from two stocks in the S&P 500, NVIDIA and Apple. So just kind of, you know, you can take a pause there if you want and think about how, you know, narrow this, how this market's really been driven by just a few names, a fewer than a few names, I guess you could say, with one or two, depending on which time frame you're looking at there. So we'll see if this thing continues. It, you know, these things tend to be momentum driven, of course, and that can go on for some time. But when it does turn over, sometimes these, you know, big outperformers can suddenly become big underperformers. So time will tell. But in terms of the rest of the equity market, just for completeness here on the month to date basis, when we take a look at the Russell 1000, which is a proxy for the large cap, versus the Russell 2000, which is a proxy for the small caps within the U.S. equity universe, they pretty much about the same, neck and neck on the month to date basis, just both in the three handle type of percent positive returns for the month to date. On the year to date basis, the Russell 1000 is, I guess I'll say, trouncing the Russell 2000 up. The Russell 1000 is up about 9% year to date, and the Russell 2000 up about 1.5%. Similar type of vibe when you parse out between growth and value. Russell 1000 growth is up about 11.5% on the year to date basis, and Russell 1000 up about 6.25% positive thus far on the year. Moving on to fixed income, a little bit of a different story here. We've got the U.S., let's see, the two-year treasury note closing, or at this point of the recording for the week, is a yield of 4.9%. It rallied a bit so far on the month-to-date basis. The yield came in by 15 basis points. But on the year-to-date basis, you've got the yield up about 60 basis points or so. On the 10-year Treasury note, looks like it's at 4.5% right now. That also rallied in about 17 basis points on the yield. And again, we're seeing this kind of parallel shift higher in the year-to-date yields. That's up about 60 basis points or so as it sold off alongside the 2-year note in terms of the yield move. On the 30-year bond, looks like we're at 4.57% yield rate. Or, sorry, looking at the wrong one, 4.65% yield. That rallied 13 basis points in yield on the month-to-date basis. But as I mentioned earlier, kind of a parallel shift when we're looking at on the year-to-date basis. That's also higher by about 60 basis points or so. So what does that mean for the broader bond complex as measured by the U.S. bond aggregate? That's down about 20 basis points week-to-date. Month-to-date, we've got some strong performance here, up 1.6%. Year-to-date, it is still down 1.7%. But when I take a look at the month-to-date basis for the various subsectors of the bond market, it's pretty much clean sweep. We've got all sectors that we cover here positive for the month-to-date basis. Leading the way here, we've got emerging markets sovereign debt up 2.3%. IG corporate credit up about 2%. Agency MBS up 1.9%. High yield up 1.5%. And treasuries up 1.3%. And then just rounding it all out, we've got bank loans up about a point here. So with that, moving over to the commodity market, commodities are also down this week. So we have a clean sweep in terms of negative performance across these three broad asset classes that we cover. Commodities are down 1.7% on the week, but also up on the month-to-date basis, up 1.9%. And it looks like right now we're just shy of a positive 7% on a year-to-date performance for the broad commodity index as measured by the Bloomberg Commodity Complex. For the individual look at the various commodities here with WTI crude futures, front month futures that we look at, the contract here is just hanging below $80 a barrel again. It's right now it's at $77.30, down about just under 6% on the price return for the month-to-date basis, and then year-to-date just up almost 8% on the price again. Similarly for gold, gold is just above 2,300 troy ounce of gold. It's on month-to-date basis up about 1.25%, and pretty strong performance on the price, at least for gold, up 12.5% for the year-to-date. So with that look across markets, Jeff, kick us off on what happened on the macro front this week.
Yeah, it was a short week, obviously, from the holiday last weekend, but we did get on Tuesday the home price indices, so the S&P CoreLogic, Case-Shiller, 20-city home price index. Month over month was up 0.33%. It was estimated just slightly above estimates. That brought the year over year number to 7.38%. So again, slightly above the estimate of 7.30. And the kind of overall number, so not the 20 city, but the overall U.S. is up 6.5% on a year over year basis. So it's still pretty good movement there. Out of the 20 cities, the bottom performer was Denver, down 0.7% month over month. And I guess there's two other cities that are negative on a 3-month annualized rate. Phoenix down 20 basis points and Tampa down 80 basis points. We move over to Wednesday. We did get the Federal Reserve beige book. Economy continues to expand. But conditions vary across different industries and districts. Most of the time, it's a slight or modest growth across the districts there. We also got on Thursday the GDP number. This is the second estimate for the first quarter of 2024. The advanced estimate, the first estimate was a positive 1.6%. This dropped to a positive 1.3% now. So, you know, a little bit of a downward shift there, still positive, so that's always good. But there, you know, kind of what changed is that there's been a decrease in personal consumption on the good side of things. This is kind of the lowest contributor to goods that we've seen since the third quarter of 2021, so a pretty long time period there. But the growth in services remains pretty steady, and it's still a very large contributor, obviously, to the economy, so that continues to remain at a very high level. On Thursday, as always, we got the initial and continuing jobless claims. Those continue to be kind of steady as she goes there. Initial claims came in at 219,000. Estimate was 217. It was 216 last week. And the continuing claims came at 1.791 million. It was estimated to be 1.796, so almost spot on the estimates there, and it was 1.787 last week. So steady as she drifts, as we like to say, on those initial jobless claims. And then today was the kind of the big day today. We did get personal income for April, came in on the nose there at 0.3%, was 0.5% last month, so a little bit of a decrease there. Spending was actually came in a little bit lower than expectations at 0.2, was expected to be 0.3, down from a 0.7. The spending does tend to be a little bit more volatile, so we'll kind of see whether the 0.2 kind of shakes out over time, or whether it's kind of a little bit of a anomaly there after the big month of spending last month. And then finally, we did get the Fed's preferred inflation gauges out today, the PCE. PCE for the month came in at 0.3%, right on the nose. That brought the year-over-year number to 2.7%. And then the core PCE, which is the Fed's purported target, came in at 0.2, which brought the kind of the year-over-year number to 2.8, kind of right there on expectations. You kind of look at the unrounded numbers, it's not as good as you would think, but obviously it's moving in the right direction. We did say that it kind of came in across the board as expected there. And if you kind of looked in, and something that
you know, the Fed and Jay Powell have kind of discounted that the so-called supercore PCE that ticked down actually to 3.4% on a year-over-year basis. So even though that's an elevated level, that's something that they're starting to see. It's starting to continue to come down a little bit. So that's a good sign here. The bad news is that we have, you know, if we look at kind of core, the core month over month PCE, we have a 0.29 rolling off next month. So it seems like we could get a little bit of a decrease in the year-over-year number if we get a month-over-month number kind of at 0.2 again versus the 0.3 rolling off. But then we get 0.18 prints kind of to close and for most of the remainder of the year, kind of sub 0.2% prints. So you're going to need to get pretty good disinflation from here for that core PCE number to get, you know, material below the kind of 2.8 level that it's at today. So it doesn't really seem, it seems like it's going to be a little harder to do. Certainly that last mile there for the inflation is going to become harder for the Fed to pull off. And that's it for the week, Sam. I guess we do want, I just want to mention the Fed speak. The blackout does start tomorrow. So so next week you won't get any Fed speakers out there. We did get Williams out, who is pretty much Powell and Williams are the two people that can move markets. And he did say that, the behavior of the economy over the past year provides ample evidence that monetary policy is restrictive in a way that helps us achieve our goals. And he did say that he doesn't feel any urgency or need to make a decision on rate cuts now. And with that, you do see the Fed meeting on June 12th. There's a 0% chance of a move. Very, very rare to see a 0%. And a lot of times, you know, we get like a 2% or 3% number, but we have a 0% chance either hike or cut. We get to a 92% chance of a cut in November, and only 1.5 cuts are priced in for the remainder of the year. So obviously it's going to be data dependent. We'll see how things shake out. But as of right now, it looks like we're still kind of three or four months away from the first rate cut. We'll see whether inflation cooperates or not.
Yeah. And as you mentioned it, I was just looking to see what kind of major data prints we get between now and June 12th, and it looks like CPI comes out on that day in the morning. So that could be a little bit of excitement going for the pre-show before we go into the presser conference of Jerome Powell.
Yep. Well, I mean, speaking of that, let's get into things to keep an eye on for next week. And it's a busy week, first week of the month, obviously. On Monday, we do get the ISM manufacturing number for May. That's expected to kind of rebound a little bit from a 49.2 last month to a 49.7. I think that it was above 50 for a while or for 1 month. And so we'll kind of see whether it kind of gets back to the above 50 or kind of gets kind of cuspy there on that 50 level. We do on Tuesday get the JOLTS job openings. That's expected to be 8.4 million, a slight decrease from the prior number. If we do get that 8.4, Mark Kimbrough has calculated that we will be job openings to unemployed people will be at 1.29 versus the prior of 1.32. So kind of still moving down there. 1.29 would be the lowest level we've had since July of 2021. On Wednesday, we get the ADP employment change number. That's 180,000 expected. We'll see whether the market pays attention to that, but doesn't seem likely. We also get the ISM services number for May. That's expected to, last month was that 49.4. So it was the first sub 50 print since the kind of end of 2022. So we'll see whether we get above 50. Expectations are that we get the 51 flat. So we'll see whether that comes to fruition or not. Thursday, of course, we get the jobless claims numbers. No surprise, they're expected to be flat. And then Friday, we do get Pizza Friday. On June 7th, the change in non-farm payrolls is expected to be 180,000. The prior month, if you remember, was 175, which is the weakest number we've had since October of last year. So we'll see whether we get that 175, 180 number. That'll obviously be a very important market moving event. And the unemployment rate is expected to remain flat at 3.9%. I believe it was like a 3.855 type number last month. So it's going to take a pretty significant move there to get to that 4.0 unemployment level. Just due to rounding. So we'll have to see where that shakes out. And labor force participation rate expected to remain, or was at 62.7 last month. There's no estimate out right now. And then the underemployment rate expected here was 7.4. We'll kind of keep an eye on that. So a pretty busy week for next week to kind of kick off the start of J-Moon.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on next week in terms of data prints. I think I'm on a plane. Either way, I'll be in transit back to LA. So I'll be tuning into you guys live as a listener this time, as we'll have Mark Kimbrough coming in to pinch hit for me on June 7th there.
Well, then you can get your market wrap up here.
That's right.
All right. Well, I'd like to, on that note, I guess it's time to wrap up this week's episode, and I'd like to thank everyone for listening.
Yeah, thanks everyone for catching us on the DL Minutes this week. As always, don't forget, you can hit us up on the X at D-Line Minutes, or even send us an email if you choose at minutes@doubleline.com. We will continue taking on topics of the week through the summer holidays. So if you have any ideas or suggestions or things you want to hear about, go ahead and send them in to us, and Jeff and I or the crew will tackle it.
Yep, sounds good. Don't forget our website is doubleline.com, YouTube channel youtube.com/doubleline capital. We have both Jeff Sherman and Jeffrey Gundlach's appearances on Fox Business from last week up on there. I recommend the Gundlach one's 8 minutes and the Sherman one's almost 6 minutes. So if you are pining for 15 minutes of Double Line, that's a good way to spend it. I guess with that, thanks for tuning in, and hope everyone has a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of Double Line Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees. Should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2024, DoubleLine Capital.